real. Bend your mouth from sea to shining sea. The world of real Americans, please stand up. No more hiding your face in the sand. The world of real Americans, please stand up.
Ourselves if we still know the freedoms that were intended for us by the founding fathers.
Oomphing and rights. When politicians take from you and me the very liberties that set us free.
Ladies and gentlemen, time for new sheriff in town. Tonight on Resurrect the Republic, Truth Radio Broadcast. RTR Truth Media Reloaded on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're going to bring to you Gordon Martinez, a man who I've gotten to interview before in the past. A wonderful man, ethical. He pledges to abide by the true meaning of the Second Amendment. Lori, I'm going to hand this over to you and go ahead on.
Absolutely, Tom. Gordon Martinez, as you know, he's running for sheriff in the 2018 election out in Clark County, Nevada. For anyone who does not know, that is the same exact area where the Bunkerville standoff happened. He is running against Sheriff Lombardo, the same sheriff who was also involved in the Bundy Ranch situation, as well as the Las Vegas shooting and plundered it and passed off his responsibilities, and also fought trying to get things released to the public about the Las Vegas, Nevada shooting in the first place. So this is who Gordon Martinez is running against. Now, Mr. Martinez spent the last 39 years as a detective in the LVMPD, 15 of which he spent as a detective in robbery and homicide division. So he definitely knows what's going on the streets. He had investigated and solved real crime, as well as leading groups such as Stop DUI and Injured Police Officers Fund. He also, you're going to love this, went against the LVMPD, and I'll let him go in detail about that. However, he has had no problems in the past exposing corruption. He is one of the individuals that will stand up. He does not worry about that, what a lot of people call that blue line. He worries about his oath, he worries about his duty, and he worries about being a peace officer and representing the people, standing for constitutional, their unalienable rights that are, of course, confirmed in the Constitution and in the Constitution of the state of Nevada. So right now I would like to introduce, hi, Gordon, how are you doing this evening?
Oh, pretty good, Laurie. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm so excited to have you this evening and to be able to speak to the people, not only of Nevada, but around the United States. What inspired you to get in the run for sheriff? I know you've done this several times, but I would like the listeners to know what truly inspired you to run for sheriff in Clark County.
Well, all my, since my teens, I've always wanted to be a policeman. I thought that was a very honorable role, and the people that you would be working around would be like-minded, and you were governed by a very fierce oath of law enforcement. And if you do not follow that oath, and that's really what it all boils down to, if you do not follow that oath and, of course, the Constitution of the United States of America, well, then this is where the problems start mounting. And that's exactly what has happened in the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department in Nevada. The the 36 years that I spent in that police department, along with almost 4 years in the Hermosa Beach Police Department, has given me quite an insight into how things should be run, how things are run, and then the subject of the sale of the law. And the law of the land should not be for sale. And that is exactly what has prompted me. And that's, this will be my fifth time running for sheriff. And it's a 4-year term. This is my fifth time running for sheriff because I know in my heart that I can straighten the police department around so that they don't do these despicable acts of constitutional violations to their employees and the constitutional violations to the citizens of Clark County. I was very aware of these violations, but you have to understand how it works within the police department. If you go against the powers, the upper police management, or the sheriff, well, you pretty much have written your own career-ending scenario. And that's the way it is. You get your job, you have a threat of losing your job almost on a daily basis if you do this or if you do that. And if you anger somebody that's in power, you're going to lose your job. And that's all there is to it. And you will be targeted, and it may not be immediate, but I can attest to the fact that it will be eventual and it will be continual. So
question, I have a question on that statement, sure. Gordon. So let's and hope that you win. If you win, are you going to do what you can do to try to reverse that trend?
Oh, that's, believe it or not, I've thought this out over several years, and it would actually be a very easy task. Mm-hmm. The moment that I step into office, you will see resignations right and left. And this is the cancerous trash that needs to be removed from the police department. And these individuals are always in the upper police middle or upper police management. The pawns, as I call them, the ones that actually do the dirty work and set things up, taint evidence, make false arrests, and target employees are actually are not the brains behind it. The brains behind it is in the upper police management. There's a phrase that I almost live by, and that is, police corruption can only exist if it is tolerated and condoned by upper police management, and that is a fact.
Absolutely, I agree with you on that one.
Well, it when I get into office, this will be an easy task as long as I can remain vertical and above ground. It will be an easy task because I'll make it very plain and clear, as I've done on numerous times, is that the law should not be for sale. Mm-hmm. And anyone that commits a criminal act, it doesn't matter who you are, you're going to... the law is going to treat you equally and fairly and go through the judicial process and prosecute you. And that's all there is to it. It doesn't matter who you are, who you know, how much money you have, or how popular you are. If you break the law, you will be treated just like everyone else. And that's a promise. That's a promise that I will make to the my constituents in Clark County. So the issue has come up on numerous occasions from groups. They ask me, well, do you think that you're a constitutional sheriff, and what proof do you have that you're a constitutional sheriff? Now, my opponents in this race, they're really not policemen. They've never been policemen. They've just all been yes men, and they haven't really been down and dirty into the trenches like I have. Mm-hmm. And so they're really not policemen. All they are is just puppets that someone else controls. And the people of Clark County just don't deserve that kind of treatment. And again, a lot of people think, oh, well, you know, that's the way it is. That's the way you're supposed to treat celebrities and give them a pass. And oh, yeah, that person's been very popular, and he's got a lot of power. He's in office, and he's basically untouchable. They can do whatever they want. Well, that all came to a head in 2011 when I filed a lawsuit, a federal lawsuit, against the police department, the sheriff at the time, Sheriff Gillespie, and 14 other high-ranking members of the police department for what they did and what they and the things they've done. And I know not just from rumor, I know firsthand because I was one of their targets. Mm-hmm. So that federal lawsuit lasted for about 4 years, and my witnesses and even my partner, can you believe this, had my partner lie under legal depositions, and that basically helped destroy and have my federal lawsuit denied by Judge Lloyd, I can't think of his name right now. Oh, George, Judge Lloyd George, Jr. Mm-hmm. And he cited a lot of things that were actually mistakes on his part, and but it would cost me about $150,000 in order to bring up those mistakes and appeal his decision. So. It's a long, hard road, but I personally did never expected it to even go as long as it did. I figured they'd find something or manufacture something that would totally discredit me, and they tried, but the federal lawsuit is just riddled with lies by the opposing side. And they have henchmen in the police department that they use on a regular basis, and one of them is attorney Nicholas Crosby, and he's probably got more notches on his belt and ruining careers and falsely and manufacturing false evidence against officers and ending their careers and furthering the credibility, if that even exists anymore, in the police department. So,
hey, Gordon.
Yeah, go ahead.
This is Tom Lacabert Stewart here. I remember when I met with you out in Bunkerville, you had told me that somebody had taken a shot at you, actually, at one time. You may not have known who that was, but could you just really touch on that just for a second?
Oh, I certainly will. It happened in 2006, and at that time, under Sheriff Gillespie, the former sheriff. He was under sheriff. I called him up, and he was running in the race along with several others. And I thought I'd give him a call and see if he would meet with me right outside his office down there at Stewart and Las Vegas Boulevard. And he asked me what I wanted, and I says, well, I want to talk about the campaign, of course. I definitely don't want to stand around and or sit with you and sing hymns. Anyway, he agreed. And he met me, down on the sidewalk on the east side of the city hall. And so I drove up. I got out of the car. I showed him that I was not wired. I was wearing shorts. Opened up my shirt, make sure. And basically, I really didn't want him to say anything. I told him, you don't even need to speak. All you got to do is listen. And so we walked around the city hall, and I had already learned of a bunch of dastardly things that he's done, including stealing $20,000 from a nonprofit organization that he was part of, and various other things, racial slurs in groups of people over on the East Coast when he went to meetings over there, and his involvement in criminal activity that occurred against the city of Las Vegas. He was. He's always been. Ever since he was even a patrolman, I remember this. He just was always such a shady type person. He always had his fingers in just about everything, and he went up through the ranks very quickly. And they're all political appointments. Whenever they have somebody that's of that caliber, it seems like that's what they wanted. So anyway, we walk around the city hall, and I'm telling them this, and at the end of our little stroll, he asked me, well, what do you want me to do? And I says, well, I want you to drop out of the race. This city has enough crooks as it is. We don't need another one. Well, apparently, he didn't have a very good sense of humor, and he never did. If he ever laughed or smiled, I think his face would crack. But anyway, 2 days later, and the time frame is pretty important. I have no proof. I have no evidence. But well, you as a uninformed juror, you see if this is going where you think it might be going. 2 days later, I'm riding my motorcycle home, and three doors away from my front door was a parked vehicle that basically, through the driver's window, shot me in the left thigh. That was a small caliber bullet. It didn't penetrate my leather chaps and my thick Levi's, but it left a goose egg on my left thigh, probably the size of a baseball. And I almost wrecked my motorcycle, but I did stop it, and then I went hobbling back with my gun in my hand, and I was going to see if I could find the suspects that shot me. Well, by that time, the vehicle just drove away, and I didn't have any opportunity to do anything. And believe me, my leg really hurt, my left thigh. And when I reflect back on it, they were going for my gut or chest, and they just shot a little bit low. And that's why it hit me in the left thigh. Anyway,
God bless it didn't kill you. Thank God.
Believe me, I you know, it kind of dawned on me later on. This is really nasty, you know, for them to do this. And we all know who is involved in this. I mean, like I said, former Sheriff Gillespie just did not have a sense of humor whatsoever. Anyway,
I could say so.
Yeah, no kidding. So anyway, I called an ambulance because I didn't know, you know, I'd never been shot before. I'd been pretty well banged up in a drunk driver versus a motorcycle policeman collision. But this really hurt, and I guess maybe it was just the intent behind it that made it even worse. So anyway, I called an ambulance. They came on over. They had me drop my pants and looked at my thigh and says, well, the bullet didn't penetrate, so you'll be all right. Go see your doctor, you know, tomorrow or the next day. And so they left. But the only reason I really called them for was so that it was documented, so somebody can't say, well, you made this whole thing up and, you know, nothing ever happened. So anyway, I took my own report, and you can take your own report, but you just can't investigate it. You know, you can just submit the information, and then regular machine is supposed to follow up on it. Now, this is kind of a big thing when a policeman gets shot, especially when he's off duty and he's just going home. This is a very big thing and should be investigated, you know, with all the enthusiasm that it needs. Sure. And guess what? I mean, I called the police and told them what happened. And of course, the dispatcher, they must have had something in the mix, because I usually speak pretty clearly and everybody understands me. And this is not my first rodeo when it comes to calling in and reporting criminal activity. So I said, yes, hi, this is Detective Gordon Martinez. I have just been shot in the left thigh while I was riding my motorcycle home, three doors away from my front door, and the shot came from a parked vehicle. Well, the dispatcher reiterated what I just said, and she says, so you're riding your motorcycle up and down the street, and you got shot in the left thigh. And I says, no. I was riding my motorcycle home, and three doors away from my front door, A shot came from a parked vehicle from the driver's window, and it hit me in the left thigh. Oh, okay, yeah. Well, do you want an ambulance? And I go, well, I've already called one, and they're en route. And she goes, okay, we'll have units, we'll have a patrol unit respond to your location. And, well, I says, well, I don't think there's really a whole lot you can do. Please check the area. But I'll take my own report, and I'll take my own photos, and then we'll just go on from there. So they did. I could see some of the patrol cars just kind of like driving around to what limited description I gave about the parked vehicle. I really didn't get a good look at it. But that was it. And then, of course, the watch commander calls me up and asks me about the situation. I told him, yeah, it's pretty cut and dry. And I didn't tell him what my feelings were, obviously, because I don't have any proof. And it would just go on deaf ears anyway. So life just went on. The following day, I turned in my report, and it was immediately assigned to a general detective. General detective came over, KJ, and he sat down at my desk, and he says, you know where this is going, right? And I says, probably in the trash can. Because I had submitted photos, I have submitted my report rather extensively in detail from, you know, whatever I could report. And he says, yeah, it's going in the trash can. He says he's already been advised by his supervisor that it's not going anywhere and to just kill it. And so,
you know, because that's what happens when all police officers get shot. Sure, sure.
Yeah. It's nice to be treated special, believe me. It makes me feel real good. Anyway, he went out to the scene. I met with him. He wanted to sit down with me and get a statement. And I'm thinking, oh, brother, oh, what are they going to set me up for now? Right? And so I didn't. And I says, KJ, that report is very detailed. And in my voluntary statement, I wrote it out. I says, that's very detailed, too. I says, there really isn't anything else you're going to glean from me other than the fact that I think it was Sheriff Gillespie that set up this thing and told his intelligence unit to go ahead and either impress upon me that I was not a well-liked person in the police department or kill me, one or the other. I said, and of course, he says, yeah, there's not too much I can do. I go, I understand that, KJ, and thank you for at least contacting me. And that was the end of it. There was no further investigation, no further contact by anyone, even my own supervisor.
See, here's a prime example of why we need an ethical constitutional sheriff in place, because I'm quite sure that if somebody took a pot shot at one of your officers under your command, would not go that way.
But believe it or not, it even gets worse with Corrections Officer Kevin Scott Daly in 2007. He just plain disappeared. He disappeared for 3 weeks until they found his severed head over there laying on the desert floor by Lake Mead, the usual mob dumpy ground that this community has. And I said mob, you know, like organized crime. That's where they usually dump the bodies over there in Henderson jurisdiction. Well, they found the severed head of a corrections officer, fully vested and full-time corrections officer, LVMP corrections officer. His severed head is laying out there on the desert floor. And this is after he failed to show up for work, no call, no show. And that is a big thing with a no-call, no-show type situation. There's a investigation that should be launched, and basically, I guess maybe I could be over-exaggerating, but if there was an officer that was missing, no-call, no-show, and no one can find him, go over his place of residence and ask friends, you know, what was going on, I would take this place brick down brick by brick until I found that officer. That's all there is to it.
Sure.
That's the way it works. And, I mean, if they'll do that, if this element will do that to an officer in the LVMPD, what chance does any civilian in this community have? They don't. There's nothing they can do. And they're subjected to this type of fear, this type of dictatorship within this county, and it's all run by organized crime. Well, let me finish
now,
this story.
I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
Real quick.
Go ahead.
On that, because it kind of ties with that. I know that, and I've seen all across the union, but in Clark County as well, it's really prevalent that a lot of people commit perjury, whether it's, say, it's a temporary restraining order, or say it is false testimony, and they sign on the sheet of paper that they're doing it under penalty of perjury. Now, a lot of innocent people have had, because of those statements under penalty of perjury, no proof backing them up, have ended up in prison only years later to find out they were innocent, and then it takes an act of Congress, basically, to get them out of prison, even though they are innocent individuals. Would you, as sheriff, be willing to, if it was brought to your attention that someone perjured themselves, and they and the other individual provided proof that it was perjury, okay, I'm not talking about, oops, this is a mistake. I'm talking about intentional perjury.
Right.
Would you, as a sheriff, then go forth and be willing to be stricter and press charges on individuals committing perjury? Because that is a felony. And I think one of the problems with this repetitive people going in and out of the system, as well as these individuals that are corrupt and individuals that do it to get their way, is because they're never held accountable for perjuring themselves. Would you be willing to press charges and actually start indicting people for perjured statements?
Oh, absolutely. If the public really knew that a statement made a purchase statement made, how much money and how much effort and it goes into their statement, making or just lying, basically, let's just call it lying, but only lying under oath, which holds a heavier penalty than just straight out lying to, let's say, an officer in the on the police force. I know the feds made it a felony or a federal offense to lie to one of their agents, but just for our conversation in Clark County, if you lie to an officer, it's a misdemeanor. The fact that it isn't done in court makes it a felony. And if it's done in court under oath, oh, absolutely, go forward and send a message basically to everyone in that community that this won't be tolerated.
Right. And then I'm talking about also outside of the court. Let's say hypothetically, okay, you've got a ticked off lady and she goes to the court and she goes and she files for a temporary restraining order or a restraining order, and she lies under penalty of perjury for that restraining order, which, of course, you know, backlashes on the individual that she's doing it against. Right.
Right.
And
right.
The other individual proves to you it's perjury. Would you be willing to press charges against that individual lady that is doing that? Because that is harming the other individual.
Right. You know, the especially in domestic violence cases where the woman goes and attempts to get a restraining order or whatever against her husband.
Hold on with that thought, Gordon.
Yeah, hang on.
Just one moment.
One second. We're going
break.
We're going to a break.
And, we'll let you finish.
We'll be right back. Resurrect Republic Truth Radio broadcast on RBN. We'll be right back after a few words from our sponsors.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions, in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale. Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Welcome back, folks. Resurrect the Republic Truth Radio broadcast on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm Tom Lackabara Stewart, and blessed to be with my co-host, Lori Anderson, who arranged this wonderful interview with a constitutional sheriff that everyone in Clark County needs to rally behind. The corruption has gone on for long enough in Clark County, Nevada, and we would like to see an honorable and respectable man stand up and take the lead and drain the Nevadan swamp, the Clark County swamp, as it were. So welcome again to the show, Gordon. It's just such a pleasure to have you here. I'm so happy that you're running for sheriff and Ryan's running for governor. And good Lord, if half of the honorable men who are finally standing up to run for office actually get in there, I think that we have some hope. So anyway, I'm going to turn this over to Lori. Go ahead, Lori.
So, Gordon, you were explaining, because we were discussing perjury, and, you know, I worked over 20 years with Partnership Against Domestic Violence, so I am all too aware of the realities of what goes on with domestic violence. However, I am also all too aware that it is misused in many forms. Many people are unaware or have it in their minds that men cannot be victims of domestic violence, and that is incorrect. But a lot of problems stems in the courts, whether it be domestic violence, temporary restraining orders, whether it be innocents being locked up for crimes they have not committed, whether it be children's services. Children's services have been caught so many times lying in order to obtain the children, and it turns into a human trafficking situation. Now, in my mind, one of the main steps that would help to stop this is when individuals, no matter if they're a regular average Joe on the street, whether they're a work for CPS, whether they work for law enforcement, whether they work for the court, whether they're a prosecutor, whether they're an attorney, if you will. Attorneys normally don't write things under penalty of perjury, but I'm just, you know, giving some examples here. Politicians, and so on and so forth. If we were to hold people accountable for what is a felony in every state, lying under penalty of perjury, and if people were actually held accountable, it would not only make the citizens and the people safer, it would also stop a lot of the false narratives that go on in these courts, and it, of course, would help with not having the largest prison population in the world. And you were discussing that you would be willing to start holding people accountable, and, of course, you have to have proof that that what they're saying is perjured. Obviously, not an absolute, not something that's a mistake and, oh, I remembered incorrectly. We're talking about intentional perjury that has gone on. For instance, we've been covering a case with a woman named Anna Taylor, and there was private doctors. They intentionally perjured some information to go after her child that CPS wouldn't even go after. And then a lot of other situations like that. And I think if people were actually held accountable for the perjury, then it would go very far into cleaning up this corrupt system, because police officers as well have gotten on the stand and perjured themselves. Gordon, you know this all too well.
Oh,
and
yes.
If they're actually held accountable, that's a felony and 5 years in prison. I think maybe people might start waking up and saying, hey, if this is not true, then I need to not be putting this under penalty of perjury. What do you think?
I absolutely agree with you. The fact that police officers perjure themselves on the stand in a courtroom under oath, it exists. Anybody who believes that it doesn't exist, it does exist. And the area in which I think it exists the most, perjury by police officers on the stand in the courtroom, is narcotic offenses. Narcotics offenses have just, they've actually ruined the Fourth Amendment. They have, lawyers have gotten in there, and high-powered lawyers, and there's always money behind it, have actually ruined and perverted the Fourth Amendment search and seizure. Whenever, let's say, and the reason this happens is because the offspring of these high-powered money brokers get involved with drugs, and in order for them to not to go to prison on it, well, they hire these lawyers that pervert the law and divert the truth, and then the rest of us regular people are stuck with case law now, and a precedent's been set. That's why these laws now involving possession charges or trafficking charges or whatever, they are very hard to prove. With case law being right in the way each and every time. So what is left? What is left for law enforcement to do about that? Well, what they do is they perjure themselves. Mm-hmm. And in order for these type of cases to go forward and to be prosecuted, they do. They perjure themselves. They perjure themselves right off the bat whenever they say a narcotics buy, where mm-hmm. a undercover narcotics officer is involved in purchasing narcotics or being involved in narcotics in any way. They perjure themselves right off the bat when they say that they never take drugs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, here's another thing too. You know, constitutionally speaking, the government nor state ever had any right to tell an individual what they can do with their body. And we know that the war on drugs has really turned out to be a scam, per se, if you will, because the same individuals who are warring on the drugs, which has caused the massive, not just criminalization, but the massive incarceration of American people all around the United States of America. The reality is, if there is no victim, there is no crime. And you can't victimize yourself. That is a choice. You know, I'm surprised that a lot of people haven't used Roe versus Wade, because Roe versus Wade wasn't about abortion. It was about the right to privacy, is what Roe versus Wade really stemmed down to. She had the right to do with her own body what she wanted to do with her own body, and the government not tell her what to do with it. But a lot of times, what frustrates me is the same individuals who are pushing this narrative are also the same individuals, not on the higher levels is what I'm speaking about, are the ones bringing the drugs in the first place. The most dangerous drugs are being funneled through Big Pharma. The biggest problem with overdoses and all this epidemic that's going on, that's Big Pharma issues. That's not issues coming from a plant that was grown in somebody's yard that actually was naturally created by God. And I'm not talking about, of course, if it's been sprayed with any kind of contaminants or anything like that. I'm talking about all natural.
Let me clarify just for a second. And we're not condoning the overprocessing of the coca plant into cocaine and of course the methamphetamine epidemic that is of course a huge problem. We're talking about more natural things that the government is lined up to you know prohibit from the people from being able to take for medicinal cures and things like that that I don't think that the government ever had a right to do. Thomas Jefferson used to sit on his porch and smoke a sweet bowl of hemp. But hemp was built this nation. So you know, when I look back to that, I just want to clarify that we're not trying to say that the use of cocaine or methamphetamine is acceptable. Right. However, I think that they're going about it all wrong. And of course, like we said, the same entities that are supposed to be enforcing the law, as you said, a lot of these narcotics cases is where you find the most amount of corruption. Wouldn't you say so?
I would. And what is the basis of all of the entire thing? Money. Money.
Yep, that's what it breaks back down to. Money, so they can steal
greed,
property.
Avarice. That's the basis of this whole thing. They don't go in there just to do it for fun. It's all
right.
Based on money.
Yeah. And it's sad. So the question also arises, let's say you're sheriff and the feds tried to come in to somebody's personal property. They don't have an actual warrant. They have a signing statement, okay? And
right.
Your constituent calls you and says, hey, they're trying to come on my property. They claim blah, 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 that I've got this plan. And this is a signing statement. It's not a warrant. would you protect your constituent?
Absolutely. And before that action would even be initiated, they would have to come through my office. Any action against any action against any constituent in the county of Clark, if I was sheriff, by the feds, has got to be cleared through my office first.
Amen.
Absolutely.
Well, I guess that kind of puts aside my next question, is how you would have handled the Bundy situation.
That was simple. That was simple. And I was up there campaigning and did a video right in front of his Clive and Bundy's ranch house when all this stuff was going down. The yes, snipers
remember
by
that.
The BLM.
Why don't you let the listeners let the listeners know what happened?
Oh, okay. Well, you mean about the entire situation?
Well, where you stood on the situation.
Oh, okay. Absolutely. Well, it's pretty apparent once you are in the inside and you talk to the actual participants that this was not a grazing tax issue. And that's something that the feds would just love to just keep perpetuating on everybody, is that this was Bundy not paying his grazing fees for his cattle. This was an opposition to an aggressive land grab by the federal government. That's what this was about. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the federal government ain't going to ever admit that. And when you ask them, and it all depends on who you ask, they say 85% of Nevada is owned by the federal government. Right. Oh, really? When did that happen? And then you ask someone else, and they say, well, wait a minute, this is public land. Okay, what does public land mean? That means that the federal government just can't come in and steal your cattle, put it up for auction, slaughter your bulls, dig a trench in it, and bury the cattle that were slaughtered, and then tear up your water line so the remaining cattle can't even get water. And this is what this was about. And, well, the bottom line is that the China wanted their solar plant and the chemicals and minerals that were on the Bundy property. The entire Bundy property was surrounded by Harry Reid. He owned the property all around them except for the area where Bundy was grazing his cattle. And he needed that in order to have China move in and do their thing. They did the same thing to the Hammonds up in Burns, Oregon. The Hammonds, Dwight and Stephen Hammond, obtained permits to do a controlled burn, and that's to further the vegetation the following season by doing that. So they got permits, and the burn got a little out of hand, burned several acres on an adjacent property, and the feds moved right in there and took that opportunity to arrest the Hammonds, get them off their ranch, and throw them in jail. And then some pencil neck geek in the Justice Department finds out that, well, we can only give a year to the Hammonds for this arson charge that they charged them with and found them guilty. Why don't we hit them with a 1974 Treasonous Act, and we can slap on 5 more years? And that's what they did. So, Stephen,
can I ask just one question about this? Now, I know that this is a federal case that we're discussing. However, right. I have a question to posit about this. Being that it's a federal case and that there was a pattern over the course of 15 years with the Hammonds of trying to push them off,
property.
It shows a previous history of intimidation. Would you not say that bringing this case after all of that harassment against them was an attempt to steal their rights, their property rights? I think that's safe to say, right?
Absolutely. They had to get them off that property so that the Russians could come in and take our uranium.
So if you as a sheriff had someone in your jurisdiction that had federal agents that moved in, that after a pattern of 15 years were abusing a ranching family who had never been convicted of another crime, never in trouble in their lives, and then turned around and moved against them in such a manner, Now, I know that you don't control the prosecutors. I know that you could only make arrests. You can initially file charges, but the prosecutor's got to pick it up. So we can't expect that you can run with the ball right into the end zone without some prosecutorial support. But would you be willing to arrest those federal agents that would abuse their power and their authority to rob the American people of their natural inherent rights?
Eventually, yes, if they did not comply with my orders. That
amen.
Bundy situation, I'm sorry, say again?
I said amen. Thank you for that.
Oh, okay. Yes, eventually I would, if that's what it would be necessary. I would use any and all resources in order to move or stop the feds from taking someone's property without a court order, without a warrant, and go ahead and try and sell their cattle, murder their cattle, or not murder, but kill their cattle. And
well, I thank you so much for that. We have to take another break, folks. We'll be right back.
Homeowners, Resurrect are you Republic. In foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield Tactical Bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Many people tell us about their experience with Extendivite. Just listen to what Glenn has to say.
Prior to taking it, I had diabetic neuropathy. The Extendivite reduced that significantly. Acid reflux was reduced. I had athlete's foot, very severe. Trimmed that down to about 75% dandruff. Almost completely gone. I had occipital neuralgia at the base of my skull. I was having migraines, reduced by about 90%. Heart palpitations, my heart would kind of stall out. I would skip a beat. Very uncomfortable. And when walking from downstairs going to sleep, by the time I got to the bedroom, which is just one flight of stairs, my heart was pounding, coming out of my chest. My vision was blurry. This completely solved that problem. Great product. Thanks.
Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Like a storm growing across the horizon, there's a record.
Welcome back, folks. Resurrect the Republic Truth Radio broadcast on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Tom Lacabara Stewart here with Lori Anderson and interviewing Gordon Martinez, running for Clark County Sheriff. the man who pledges to abide by the true meaning of the Second Amendment, which is your inherent, inalienable, irrevocable right, your natural right, not granted to you in an amendment, but protected by an amendment that restricts government as to where they cannot go. And to have a lawman who understands this and all of the things that we've been talking about is so refreshing. You folks out there in Clark County, if you don't vote for this man, I don't like to name call you, but I'd say you were a fool. We got Gordon on a roll now, and we want to keep on going with that. So I'm gonna just defer back to you, sir.
Okay, I wanted to finish what I would do in the Bundy situation that Sheriff Gillespie and Lombardo did not do, and that they did not protect their constituents. They rolled over. They did what the feds wanted them to do, and that was nothing. And the feds went ahead and just rolled on with what you do with a name called domestic terrorism. And that name was given to the Bundys and the Patriots that were out there during this time by Senator Harry Reid. Now, once you are labeled, and I guess maybe a senator can label you this, once you are labeled a domestic terrorist, well, then the Patriot Act comes into play. And the Patriot Act allows you to detain individuals that are suspected of domestic terrorism. And that was probably one of the reasons that they were able to incarcerate the Bundys and several others under that act, because they were labeled domestic terrorists. Now, going back to what I would do, and I told you that once the feds were advised to cease and desist and not take somebody's property without due process, I would have arrested them. If they did not comply, I would have used every and all resources at my disposal to stop the BLM from doing that. Now, I doubt if they would ever make me resort to my powers of arrest, but that's what I would do, and I'm sure that they would back off and regroup and fight another day. You know, I hate to even use the analogy, but the Waco incident, what did that sheriff do?
Yeah.
He did nothing. All he did was sit back and let the feds go ahead and run the show, and look what happened. And that seems like that's what happens every damn time the feds take over a major incident that the local law enforcement can't handle or don't want to handle, and they'd rather hand it off to the feds.
We're taking the top of the hour break. That comes about pretty quick here, but we'll be back into the second hour with Gordon Martinez, running for Clark County Sheriff, ladies and gentlemen. Resurrect the Republic Truth Radio broadcast on RBN.
This is too good to be true, except this time it is real. 100%. No joke. How about a $25,000 membership to Front Sight Firearms Training Facility as a thank you bonus for a one-time donation to RBN of only $500? It is a Commander Lifetime membership with no yearly fees or dues. The training is free for the rest of your life with over 50 different classes. Then leave it to your designated beneficiary. You provide the approved firearm, holster, ammo, eye, and ear protection. Many features and bonuses are included, more than you would ever expect or believe. This is the ultimate graduation present, wedding gift, etc., etc. See the details. Go to RBN's webpage and frontsight.com to make it happen. May 5th is the last day you will hear this offer on this radio network. Help keep RBN alive. Tell 5.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.